The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Thank you so much, choir. That was extraordinary. Made me wonder if we could just have an AI, but a real one, version of a trip back through the century and three quarters and be put into the room like this one and the other places we occupy to be with our people. How powerful that would be, but to imagine how many have been like we are in moments like this. I want to thank John Burens, who's my mentor and was my minister growing up, the Reverend Dr. John Burens, for being here and being the engine behind this 175th anniversary, so that we didn't do what I'm inclined to do, which is just the headlong tumble into the next challenge and not take these moments to stop and take stock. And I want to thank Linda Enger, who's been at the church since she was a 20-something, always with sleeves rolled up. Where are you, Linda? You've got to be up close because you're doing... Oh, you're in the choir, right. She's going to zip line down for the invitations later. And for all of your good judgment and warmth and laughter and encouragement, and the whole 175-year celebration team, Judy Payne, who also brings beauty and flowers to this space, Milo Henke, who I saw earlier over here, for your leadership, Gregory Stevens and Gino Fortunato, and Gail Reynolds, who I saw earlier this morning. It was such a treat these last couple Sundays to have Diane Miller a couple weeks ago celebrating her 50th year of preaching and her 50th anniversary, or almost 50th, of being in ministry. The first woman in this pulpit who hired the first out gay minister who would serve in leadership in the denomination. And John's service last week, which was such a gift. But also, John, thank you again for your book, for the history. It's just such an amazing act by someone that we're so lucky to have. If you don't have it, we have copies, but you can order them too through Amazon. How lucky we are to have so much intelligence and depth and connection to our movement and endurance to pull that across the finish line for us to have forever, to help ground us in where we have been and who we have been. And I will say, there is nothing like even just reading the first few chapters again to help you feel better about where we are in the state of things. I mean, as bad as this gets, at least so far, it's better than typhoid in the water and diphtheria, fires regularly raising neighborhoods, journalists and publishers shot in the streets for telling their truths, people tried by vigilante groups who were the good guys who hung them in the streets. We know how to navigate, it reminds me, wild times in the Wild West at First UU Society. And there are all those great characters to be proud of, Thomas Starr King, of course, Frederick Law Olmsted, Leland and Jane Stanford, publishers and writers and poets and business people who were also very active civic leaders, and senators and governors, and the Align sisters who never married but plowed themselves into civic life and charitable efforts and are largely responsible for our center. The founders of schools and universities, like you talked about last week, John, the Reverend Horatio Stebbins, roundly credited, and rightly so, for forging the deal that created the University of California at Berkeley, where he served on the Board of Regents for over a quarter of a century. We have not been historically in our founding, nor are we now, or should we ever be, marginal, shrinking violets. I think it was you, Michael, who reminded me that we managed to get an entire board of supervisors fired. Yeah, so watch out. Forgot to tell that to Mick Del Rosario before he left. A secret weapon, exactly. There is leadership, there is boldness that runs in our veins again and again and again, and right now too. And it's good to be reminded that it is part of our inheritance. Because we are at yet another interesting moment in American history, aren't we, people? We are at another crisis time where that Chinese ideogram, you know, the one for crisis that is a combination of two characters, is one we need to remember. It is both a time of danger and a pivotal moment of opportunity. And we hold both. I was away much of the last 2 weeks, engaged in all kinds of leadership and collegial engagements on the East Coast. And the beginning of that time was the October board meeting of our Unitarian Universalist Association, which I was honored to be voted onto at the last General Assembly gathering of our delegates in June. At this meeting, we were looking back at recent history of the denomination and also what it would mean, what it does mean, what it might mean to support members and congregations to meet this moment. A moment when congregations and leaders are being doxxed. A moment when our neighbors and our members feel threatened, and rightly so, and are losing protections. All of the challenges, and to find in it also opportunities. To help frame the conversation, we looked at a snapshot of data about Unitarian Universalists from our most recent certifications. Right now, there are about 1,000 UU congregations. We are small. Maybe another 60 or so emerging their way into be fully engaged communities. There are 21 overseas. That number, though, that total number, it's gone down about 2% in the last decade. At the same time that our annual pledges have held strong, even adjusted for inflation, grown a bit. We are, if you're going to generalize, holding steady as a denomination, not losing ground as fast as a lot of the mainstream denominations have been, but against population growth, my friends, our proportionate representation is shrinking. And we all live, those of you who are from the Bay Area and not visiting, we live in one of the most secular metropolitan areas in the country, and many people around us are asking, why church? Why church? It's a good moment to ask it among ourselves. Early in my career, I don't know, it hit me that church was basically always about three things, I decided. Three functions that would transcend theology and philosophy, which for us is an important distinction. Obvious and simple, that would evolve over time and how they were expressed, but these were our purposes. The first was to deepen the conversations among us, right? To invite all of the big questions of what it means to be human, discernment about how we want to live our lives so that when we come to die, it has been worth our being on this planet. With a changing sense always in those conversations of what sacred texts, who our prophets are that we discuss and hold up as Gregory did for us today, we do the work that Emerson called life pass through the fire of thought, and we do it together. Second, our work was to build community, to build authentic community based not on posturing, not on competition, but on honest conversations, on risking vulnerability, on trust, building trust, grounded in shared promises like those that we say in our covenant and the other covenants that we have that bind us in this community, that are promises of the heart, only of the heart, that tell us, but of the heart, that tell us how we want to be together, how we will hold one another accountable in this experiment in living beloved community. And we live it and practice it here in part so that we get infected with it and can take it out into the world and hope it infects people and relationships beyond here too. And finally, the third piece of this was that informed by the truth we come to know and the visions of how we are going to be together and strengthened by our connections, we go out to serve the world and shape it. We go out to plow ourselves into it. Go look at all those Reiner Award winners, and each of them just among a smattering of people among us, all of you included, who have done that, and how we do that. We are not political per se as a community, but we know that institutions endure beyond individual lives. And some of our most enduring institutions that have the biggest impact on human lives are the ones our governments run. So we lean in to shape lives, show up to ask for the commutation of death sentences and the abolition of it, to demand responsiveness from our political entities and leaders in service of the larger good. All of what I just described is what we do here, isn't it? It still is. It gets focused differently in every era. The reading list changes. But the mission is the same. And there is this other piece of why church. It's in there, but it's also separate from it, that feels existentially important to me in ways that I am only now really understanding and naming, and what I want to hold up for us today to think about. I got the end of the thread of it long ago when I was talking to a colleague about a difficult situation that their congregation was facing. You see, there was this member of the congregation, a woman who had been a pillar of the church. She'd raised her kids in the congregation. She had taught in religious education. She'd served in leadership, been a steady volunteer, brought soup to the sick, been a thoughtful presence in hard conversations. And then the oddest thing happened. She started drinking. And what alcohol did to her system was like unlike anything that colleague or I had ever seen. The woman not only showed up inebriated at church events, at worship, but worse, it changed her whole personality. She raged against people with almost no provocation. She threatened violence in these moments. It was such a sadness, and it was such a shock to people. And I asked the colleague what the lay leaders, what they were doing, all of them. And what they were doing included all the important stuff. Support for the kids, having careful conversations with her about the effect she was having on folks and the impact on her own life, planning an intervention. They were working to invite her back into the life they knew she was capable of. And then the colleagues said this thing that I will never forget. They said, "Sometimes our job is to keep a person's best self in safe keeping until they can reclaim it. Sometimes our job is to keep a person's best self in safe keeping until they can reclaim it. That's our job. Yes. That is also our job. In this community that asks what the good life is, in this community that takes the time to get to know one another, to truly see one another for who we each are, we do come to know one another's best selves. And if they're forgotten, even in rare moments when we stray from them, we hope and expect and offer the gift of holding one another's best self in sacred keeping, don't we? But it doesn't just end there. Doesn't our history also tell us of the sacred keeping we do of the vision we have of who we are together as a city? Why we have served since the winter shelter started as a place to house the homeless, because people who are unhoused should have a place in winter to lay their head and a good meal and a safe place before we can solve the problem for good. Didn't Thomas Starr King say to the nation that was trending toward accommodationist policies toward slavery that we are a people who believe in the equality of races that shall not abide slavery, that we will be a state that stays in the Union? Didn't he preach that from the church and the town center, from Union Square, so long that they called it Union Square, and anywhere people would hear him or invite him, preach it until it came true? And when a local preacher talked of the two presidents as if Jefferson Davis and Abraham Lincoln were equals to be taken in equal account, didn't King speak against the pastor, and didn't a crowd rise up outside the church, and wasn't the preacher run out of town? I won't send that chapter to the people of Calvary Presbyterian. But I am keeping it in my back pocket. And when the police couldn't be trusted to keep order and those vigilante groups took to the streets to bring justice to wrongdoers, it was businessman and civic leader and church founder Captain Frederick McCondry who, with others, worked with officials to bring some order to the city, to respond to the concerns, to tame the passions, because summarily trying and hanging people in the streets is not what good people should do, even in the name of justice. And I think in these two examples and all that followed, part of what gives our leaders, lay and ordained, credibility is that we aren't doing this work for personal gain. We aren't doing it for notoriety. We have instead bound ourselves in this community of sacred promises with the discipline of deep reflection and the work to be beloved community and a commitment to serve that outside these walls, not just within it. And there is power in that seeming powerlessness that invites people to join us. There is power in being people among the people who will always hold the best of who we are called to be and who we can be out there for others to see with us and reclaim together. In an act that some weeks feels like stubborn determination and endurance, but always out of largest love and a hope that will not be destroyed. In Judaism, there is the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark. You've seen it if you've been to services, right? Often an ornate cabinet in the front and center of the worship space where the Torah scrolls are kept, where each week those scrolls are taken out to remind people of the truths they are keepers of. If we had an ark, I think it would be people's best selves, our nation's best self, we put in it and take out again each week. Each week we promise to hold it out again for ourselves to see and then to offer to others to reclaim. Each week, you and I, we commit to say, hey, California, hey, the United, so-called United States of America, hey, Bay Area and San Francisco and the Tenderloin and Pat and Robert and Sam and Rebecca, here is the deepest, most noble, God-oriented you that we have come to know through deep discernment and conversations with sacred texts and life passed through the fire of thought. Come. You can have it back. It's not lost. You just temporarily forgot it. Reclaim it with us. We have kept it for you, for us. What love there is in that. What soft power that is no power, but what love looks like when it is in action. Yesterday, members here helped see the fruits of their instigation and co-sponsorship, our co-sponsorship. Members here were the backbone organizers and many of the attendees at a festival across the street at St. Mark's in their garden that was a celebration of immigrants held there together in shared work, held there against a backdrop of false narratives, of scapegoating, in a world that is increasingly cruel, that is misusing our resources for public spectacle and legal and human rights violations and so much else. And we stood to say, we will sing a different song in these times together. There were food vendors and people selling their wares, people many of whom who cannot make a living these days without the risk of being snatched from their place of work. There were organizations present who do outreach and support and mutual aid, many of them run by Latin American leaders in the cities. There was a gorgeous land acknowledgement to open us up by Grandma Mary, by Native American leaders who were there in solidarity, reminding us by their presence that we are the immigrants. There were Know Your Rights trainings, and free haircuts, and music, and lots of laughter, and hugs, and reunions, because so many of these folks know us. They've spoken at our forums. We've co-led programs before. One of them has been interviewed in our Pod and Country podcast. We have connected them to leaders, if they didn't already know him, like Michael Pappas, who was also there to magnify their work. It was a gathering of a handful of the people that Gregory also just talked about, the modern keepers in all the places we live. The modern keepers of sacred visions of the best of who we are and who we are called to be. The president of the denomination, our denomination, Sophia Betancourt, said, stay local in your work right now and double down on partnerships, people already doing the work. And we are doing that. Open Door Legal, the festival across the street, everywhere we can think to. We are doing, my friends, what we have been doing, I think, for 175 years. This building, the third monument and home to this work, a place we built to make space for all who would share that mission with us, a symbol of the truth and trust that faithful people will show up to work generation after generation after generation to live as we are, committed to go deep together, pass life through the fire of thought, build beloved community, serve, And as part of that service, to hold out the best we know we are each capable of, and together capable of, to keep it in the arc of this place. It is our love beyond belief. It's what we inherit and the call we answer. It's in times like these, especially the heart of why church? What is the world without people who keep this faith? So this hallowed place built to withstand earthquakes has weathered wars and revolutions and fires. It has shown up in testing times and celebrated hard times of moral victory too, let's not forget. And so may this chapter that we are about to write be deeply blessed by the heroes and heroines and prophets and people with rolled up sleeves all among us together. May we dare to dream a bit. May all that sacred and divine that we hold out in our hands, may it be taken up by those to whom it belongs. May the arc of this place spill out its sacred keepings into the streets and the hearts of those beyond this place, so that the common world we uncommonly make together may be the heaven we dream, planted in the earth we live on, and the lives we've been lucky enough to be given. So blessings to us, members and friends of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco. Let's rejoice in the inheritance that is ours, in the era that is given us to live. May we be bold, joyful, loving, and damned persistent in our work. Amen. Where is Gino? Gino.
Hello. Hi, everyone. I've got a story for all ages for you today. I remember when I was young, and it was my birthday, my mother would go and buy a cake and put a candle on, one candle for every year I was born. And I would carefully count and make sure that she had that number right. I know this is going to sound silly to the younger people here, but cakes, as wonderful as they are for birthday celebrations and anniversaries, they're not always the best thing. For example, you can't put a cake up on the wall. You cannot, it doesn't last. And 25 years from now, are you going to remember who actually gave you that cake? No. And what's the worst sin of all? You get a vanilla cake when you really want chocolate. Or my favorite, Italian rum cake. Mwah. But its 175th birthday is really, really important to recognize. And as in governments, we have a particular way of recognizing these kind of anniversaries, birthdays, important events. It's called a proclamation. In the city of San Francisco, a very, very important part of the government, of course, is the Board of Supervisors. And our congregation is part of District 2, and our supervisor in District 2 is Stephen Sherrill. Unfortunately, Supervisor Sherrill cannot be here today. He's traveling. However, he was kind enough to invite his legislative aide, Mick Del Rosario, to come join us today and present a proclamation to Reverend Vanessa Rush Southern, our senior minister, to celebrate our birthday here of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco. I'd like to invite Mr. Del Rosario up to this chancel.
I'm a stand-in for all of you, as you know.
Thank you so much for those kind words, Gino. Good morning, everyone. Good to be here on a Sunday. I am honored, and on behalf of Supervisor Stephen Sherrill, District 2, first, welcome to District 2. But in all seriousness, we are so honored to join you all in celebrating 175 years for the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco. Thank you again, Gino, Reverend Southern, and also thank you, Michael, and to both of you as well for being here, to your staff and volunteers, and to all of you for, you know, making this all possible. 175 years of the history of the church wouldn't be happening in the first place if it wasn't for the congregation that you all here being able to shape the city's moral and civic fabric for generations. The values that you all live by of justice, compassion, and inclusion, we believe will continue to lead the way for San Francisco, and the commitment to social action and community care sets an example for all of us here in the city and county of San Francisco. You know, we're talking about the history of 175 years dating back to, I believe it was the Civil War, even before the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And I heard that the church is older than the San Francisco Chronicle. So that's a lot of history in that as well. But in all seriousness, this milestone, it's not just about the longevity, it's also about the legacy, the impact, and the continued chapters that you all will continue to place in the next 175 years as well. So I just want to say thank you for reminding us that love, reason, and justice is and must coexist in this building, but also in our city as well. So on that note, on behalf of Supervisor Sherrill and the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, we passed a resolution earlier this month recognizing the 175th anniversary for the church. So what I have right here is the proclamation at hand. So if you'd like, I can recite it as well. Okay. Oh yeah, this is what it looks like right here. So proclamation in the city and county of San Francisco, the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco Day, October 26, 2025. Dog agrees also. Whereas 2025 marks the 175th anniversary of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco, a historic spiritual and social force that has long served as a beacon of justice, compassion, and progressive values in the heart of the city. And whereas, since its founding in 1850, the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco has provided a welcoming spiritual home for those seeking personal growth, community belonging, and collective action grounded in love and reason. And whereas the congregation has upheld a deep and unwavering commitment to advancing social justice, standing at the forefront of historic movements, including abolition, women's suffrage, LGBTQ plus rights, racial equity, immigrant justice, and environmental stewardship. And whereas the Society's landmark building at 1187 Franklin Street, constructed in 1889 and designated a San Francisco landmark, is not only a sacred space for worship, but also a sanctuary for the arts, music, learning, and public discourse. And whereas the Society is home to vibrant worship services, music programs, social justice teams, and spiritual education for all ages, reflecting its mission to foster spiritual growth and act for justice in the world. And whereas, over the course of 175 years, the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco has served a vital, intergenerational, and multicultural community, continuously welcoming people of all backgrounds, beliefs, and identities to gather in shared purpose and mutual respect. And whereas the Society remains an anchor institution in San Francisco, partnering with local organizations to shelter the unhoused, protect the rights of immigrants, and respond to pressing social needs through the grassroots activism and public advocacy. Now, Therefore, be it resolved that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors declares October 26, 2025 as First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco Day in the City and County of San Francisco, and be it further resolved that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors proudly celebrates the 175th anniversary of the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco, honoring its legacy of courageous love, public service, and prophetic witnesses, and be it further resolved that the Board of Supervisors commends the First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco for its steadfast leadership and nurturing a more just, compassionate, and inclusive city for all. And it's signed by Supervisor Stephen Sherrill. So, Reverend.
Thank Mick Del Rosario for his service in the city and for all you do to advance. I mean, I had the fortune, Michael and I both did, of meeting you when we were advocating for the commutation of death sentences in the state of California. And we're just so grateful for all the ways in which you lean in to help move our government, which represents us, to serve our values. And being here on a Sunday and having to say Unitarian Universalist about 15 times. I think he deserves a standing ovation. Thank you. Thank you so much.
What calls me to my best self and engaging others who do bold, selfless, fabulous, queer, and radical things for others. In the mid-1800s, while way too many people in our nation tried to make peace with enslaving and enslaving people, Unitarian Reverend Theodore Parker put war on these atrocities. From his Boston pulpit, he preached rebellion to injustice, and he did it as righteousness. He declared that every slave catcher should tremble before the moral law of God. He not only harbored enslaved runaways in his home, but preached abolitionist sermons with a loaded pistol, often, story goes, by his side to protect from the white Christian nationalists who might storm in the church. His many words carved fire into the consciousness of our nation. You might think of these words as MLK, but a great Baptist preacher, but they came from our Unitarian Reverend Theodore Parker. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Reverend Parker didn't just believe in that big arc. He struggled to bend it with faith that refused to be silent in the face of fascism. On March 23rd, 1972, Dr. Angela Davis walked into the courtroom down in San Jose with her afro picked fully out and her fist raised up in the air. She became a living embodiment of black power. Falsely charged, she didn't shrink back and apologize. She commanded the room with intellect, with defiance, and with pride. Her presence, ooh, I got goosebumps. Her presence alone was a declaration of blackness's power. Dignity is unshakable, and resistance is absolutely never futile. In that moment, though, she empowered an entire movement, showing that standing fully in your truth can ignite courage and defiance well beyond courtroom walls and into the hearts of the oppressed. On November 18th, 2019, in West Oakland, a couple mothers, Dominique and Samira, along with their kids, they moved into a vacant home. It was an investor-owned home, dilapidated, let down, no one had lived there for years, and they transformed it into a quaint, beautiful home. tired of watching their children sleep in cars while empty homes sat behind locked gates, they took bold action. Their homemaking was not an act of squatting, but a deliberate act of sacred disobedience aimed at drawing attention to the root causes of the housing crisis. They spurred a movement of inspired mamas and caretakers across the country to do the same holy work. Just this past year, a coalition of activists around the world set sail toward Gaza, determined to break the blockade and to deliver vital aid to those who are starving to death. On more than 40 boats from many countries, they carried food, medicine, and supplies, as well as the message of global love, of compassion, and of solidarity. Their journey was not mere charity. It was an act of revolutionary courage against the genocide and the occupation that is trapping millions. Intercepted by Israeli naval forces and detained, they faced intimidation, beatings, and starvation, yet their resolve never wavered. Another flotilla went back. Their actions have inspired a new wave of international struggles and many other flotillas. There's even one now going to the Amazon, where the next COP conference is happening, to defend the rights of indigenous people there. All of this, though, reminds us that ordinary people like you and like I can take extraordinary, holy action for human dignity and justice. These freedom fighters are calling the world, and definitely calling us Unitarian Universalists, into our best selves, what it truly means to be human. The selves that are unified by justice, equity, inclusion, pluralism, generosity, transformation, and all with love at the center. If you're a real UU nerd, you know what that is, means. Jet pig? So when we see Dr. Angela Davis walk into a courtroom with her afro out and her fist raised, when we see black and brown mothers occupying vacant homes just so their children have a place to sleep other than a car, when we see clergy, many of you in this room, standing in the streets taking rubber bullets by ICE just the other day over at the island, we feel the pull of something stronger, something larger than fear. Bold, loving action is holy and it's contagious. It wakes spirit inside us and it calls us to step forward, to take big risks, to act in ways we might never have thought imaginable. And action, my friends, is the real antidote to despair, because it reminds us that change is made in our bodies, in our hearts, and with our voices, not just our hope, although hope is very important. Our best Unitarian Universalist selves emerge not in comfort, but in courage, in joining the struggle for the interconnected web of life, in taking our place beside the working class and oppressed. Because when others, like the Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco has for so many years, acts boldly, they teach others how to act boldly, and they do it. They share in that courage. We find both our power and our faith most fully alive in taking courage and watching those who have done the same. So my friends, take courage and let's continue to be the boldest church in this city. Amen and blessed be.